you know about the true crimes that inspired a Bruce Springsteen album? Or the murders AC/DC was blamed for? How about Taylor Swift's violent stalkers? Or the suspicious deaths of Brittany Murphy and River Phoenix? These stories and more are told in the Disgraceland podcast, hosted by me, Jake Brennan, every Tuesday, where I dive deep into subjects from the dark side of music history and entertainment. So follow and listen to Disgraceland on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
High noon, Jones and Keefe. It's a Monday. Normally we talk to Terp, Pure Hoops High Noon, every Wednesday. But with game four tonight at MSG and boots on the ground in New York, we figured we'd check in with Terp. A reminder, 24 hours from now, we have a Tommy Tuesday at High Noon that returns on Tuesdays here on Jones and Keefe. We'll get to your phone calls coming up. You got questions for Terp, 617-779-7937. You can jump in there. We'll get to all your Celtics thoughts coming up. But Justin Turpin, WEEI Live in New York. What's going on, Terp?
What's up, guys?
What can you tell us about Celtics shoot-around? That happened earlier today. Anything jump out from there?
Yeah, the big story, obviously, Sam Hauser. It looks good. He was upgraded from doubtful to questionable yesterday, and he concluded his pregame warm-up here with a dunk. So I think he's going to play tonight, and he looks good.
What's going on with Porzingis? Or anything new coming out with Porzingis? We saw him play, and really, out of all the guys that were really good in Game 3, he was pretty ineffective, didn't play a lot of minutes. Not that they needed him to or anything, but anything new on the Porzingis front?
Yeah, still nothing really new on that front. It's just so bizarre because, obviously, he dealt with this thing in March, and it cost him, I think it was 8 games, and now it just kind of comes back, and it seems like he's just kind of waking up and hoping it's going to go away at some point. It's just the whole situation regarding that's bizarre. And they've definitely missed him a lot this postseason, just him being like the true Kristaps Porzingis that we've been seeing. And that's why they went out and got him. Like, I take, for example, the end of game two, when they go 0-14 over an 8-minute stretch in the fourth quarter, Kristaps Porzingis is supposed to be the guy that gets them back on track, that they just get in the post, that they just let him go to work, let him right the ship offensively. Like, that's why they went out and got him, because they couldn't break his own against Miami. So they went out and got a guy that kind of matchup proof, that can break down any defense. And he hasn't been able to do that. So it doesn't matter in games like game three when the shots are falling and they don't really need the clutch minutes from him. But like, he is their fourth quarter guy, and he's been completely non-existent, and it's been a big deal for them this year. And that's why they've lost a couple of these playoff games, because the safety valve that you've relied so heavily on is just kind of missing.
So you mentioned the shooting and how it came around in game three. They were 20 out of 40 in game three, compared to 25 out of 100 in the first two games of the series. Why do you think the shooting came around in game three? Don't just give me a math answer, like they were due or it was ultimately going to come around. Like, why were they hitting more in game three? Because I do have a theory. I'm curious your thoughts.
First of all, I think it starts with the ball movement. And I know you don't want a math answer, but I will say this, in terms of the assist numbers, it's been kind of telling with their assist numbers. And assists are a flawed stat, obviously, because they have to go in. And I know this offense is a lot process-based, but they have 3 double-digit wins this postseason. And in all of those games, the Celtics have recorded at least 20 assists. Those are the only games they've reached 20 assists. So it's been said a long time about this team, when the ball is moving more freely, they are a better team. So I think that's the answer to that. They were getting better looks from three. Like, they were getting open looks in games 1 and 2, but they were pull-up threes. They were not like catch and shoot, good wide open corner threes. Like, it was a lot different, the quality of threes they were taking in game three, and that's why they were making them. So ball movement has always been a key to this team. And I think in games 1 and 2, they relied too heavily on those matchups that we spent talking all this previewing of the series. We were talking about the matchups that the Celtics could exploit. I think they got too involved in that in games 1 and 2, and they were just kind of going after them. Like, they were settling for pull up threes because they had a good matchup. Whereas in game three, they were moving the ball and it was creating higher quality looks that led to them making 20 or 40.
I think part of it for me was Derek White specifically. He took so many threes the first two games. And I know that's his game. I know, like, what, 75% of his shots are threes, like going back to the regular season. But he just took so many, and it felt like a lot of them were early in the possession, and he wasn't hitting them. He only took 6 and made 3 of them. Of course, everybody shot pretty well in game three. But he was efficient. He had 17 points. It feels like Derek White had far and away his best game, and I'd like to see more of that than the just catch it and shoot that we saw in the first two games.
For sure. And this team, ever since Derek got here, it's kind of gone as he goes. If you look at the box score, if you just look at his raw plus minus, when it's a positive, they're very hard to beat. Like, I don't have the exact numbers in front of me, but like the numbers of when Derek is a plus on the court that night are ridiculous. Like, they are almost unstoppable when he plays well. And that's the thing. He took 15 threes in game one. Like, that's way too many. That's way too many, especially when you have guys like Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown, that you want to get them more shots and you got to get them going inside. So no, I'm with you for sure. And like, when he's taking that many, it's just, and like you said, a lot early in the shot clock, where those are a lot of those pull up threes that we're talking about earlier. These, they're a good look because they're open, I guess, but they're not necessarily a high-quality look because it's a pull-up rather than a catch-and-shoot. And I think he was the biggest culprit in that. A lot of his shots were pull-ups in those first two games, and he was getting a lot more in-rhythm in Game 3, which was the biggest difference. Like, they were just getting in-rhythm threes. You can keep looking at all these open shots that they had, but they were pull-ups. It's a lot different.
Celtics won Game 3 by 22. They led by as many as 31, I think it was, in that game. Two-part question. Can they win close games against New York? And two, does it matter? Are we going to have any more close games with the Knicks?
I mean, if they build a lead and just hold it, we shouldn't have that problem. And they did a good job of that. And they took the crowd out of the Game 3 early. Like, they jumped on them early. They built like a 16-point lead. It never dropped below there early in the game. And like, it was really as simple as just making the shots when you have the lead. Don't be settling for empty possessions. Don't try to go for the kill shot. I think that was another thing too with the three-point shooting in games one and two. They kept going up big, and they'd go for these kill shots, these momentum threes. And I think Jaylen Brown kind of called them out for a little bit after game two. He's like, we don't have to go for this like momentum-changing three. Just like, keep playing our game. Just score. Like, you have the lead. Literally just keep scoring, and you're going to win the game. So, I mean, I think they can win close games, but it goes back to what we were talking about earlier with Kristaps Porzingis. Like, they need him to be effective in those moments because he's their fourth quarter guy. Obviously, a lot of attention on Jason Tatum, a lot of attention on Jaylen Brown. He's the difference maker. He's the guy that they went out to succeed in those moments, and he hasn't been there. So I think they can win close games. They proved all the year. Like, their clutch win percentage is one of the best in the league. Last year, they were fantastic in the clutch. Like, they can win close games, but they need Kristaps Porzingis badly.
I know it's nearly impossible to be a Joe Mazzulla translator, but his comments after the game about how you got to tap into the darkness, what do you think he meant by that, if anything?
I have absolutely no clue.
Just something creepy to say.
Yeah, like, I mean, just another serial killer quote there.
Yeah.
Add to the,
it's on our list. We'll throw it in.
Yeah. I don't know what he meant by that, especially because they're like talking about how like they've been there before. Like, what darkness are you tapping into? Like, you're leading on experience and all this, but you want to tap into the darkness. I don't know. It's hard to understand, but yeah, I mean, that's Joe Mazzulla.
What do you think of the general attitude of the team coming out? I mean, it seemed like outside looking in, you were there. We weren't. It's Terp live in New York leading up to game four. You can check out all his work. WEEI, follow him on Twitter at Justin M. Turpin. And we'll talk to Terp again on Wednesday. What do you think of the general attitude of the team coming out of the game? It felt like from the outside looking in, like a weight off the shoulders. Tatum's talking about the criticism he's dealt with, the comment that Keith just referenced from Mazzulla tapping into the darkness. Even Jaylen Brown was like, look, you got to beat us four times. Or you don't beat us with two wins. You got to beat us four times. It seemed like a weight off their shoulders. How do you interpret the mood following game three?
I really haven't sensed any shift in the mood, to be honest. Even when they were down 0-2, it felt like they were always just confident. Like, they knew that those were games they should have won. And had they made just a handful of open, wide open shots, they would have won. So I don't think there was any kind of shift in that direction at all. I think they've always kind of had this confidence, and they know they are. There is a kind of a swagger to this team where they know they have this talent. They know they are one of the most talented, if not the most talented team in the league. So no, I mean, I don't really shift. Like, I didn't sense any shifts, but I think getting one on the road and actually getting a win did boost some confidence, as it would.
What was the atmosphere like inside MSG? I know the Celtics pretty much just took control of the game and ran away with it. Not a lot to cheer for the Knicks, but what is that atmosphere like?
Yeah, there was celebrities everywhere, which is always the case with MSG, which is pretty cool. Like, you just, like, courtside, you look down, it's like, oh, there's Ben Stiller, there's Timothy Chalamet, whoever it may be. Like, so that part of it's pretty cool, but they took them out really early, and I think there was some sort of...
Do you know about the true crimes that inspired a Bruce Springsteen album? Or the murders AC/DC was blamed for? How about Taylor Swift's violent stalkers? Or the suspicious deaths of Brittany Murphy and River Phoenix? These stories and more are told in the Disgraceland podcast, hosted by me, Jake Brennan, every Tuesday, where I dive deep into subjects from the dark side of music history and entertainment. So follow and listen to Disgraceland on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
like energy with the crowd, even into the late second quarter, into the third quarter, because obviously what happened in the games one and two, there was some sort of confidence. But for the most part, every time New York was made a run, the Celtics punched back, which was the biggest thing. Like that poise that they had been lacking in games one and two, when New York made a run, like the Celtics would just get desperate and maybe settle for a shot. They never did that. And they did a great job of really keeping this crowd out of it, because every time the momentum would start to swing, Boston had an answer, which was huge. And I think that was my biggest takeaway, I think, from game three, is just the poise that they played with. Like, they looked like the championship team that we've seen last year, that we've seen in the past, just because they were able to stay level-headed. They weren't going with the ebbs and flows of the game. They just remain themselves, and I think that was the biggest difference maker, and it did a great job taking the crowd out of the game as well.
The other series in the East right now, 3-1 in favor of the Pacers. I don't know how much of it you were able to watch, but it seems like that series is over. Do you think it's a foregone conclusion, Celtics and Pacers next round?
It's hard not to look at that game last night and think that. They should just have running clock for the rest of that series. Like, that was absolutely embarrassing from Cleveland. And, I mean, they just seemed like just a fraudulent team. Like, I know they were banged up a little bit in the series, but they had everyone back. It's just, there's a lot of holes on that team that have been exposed in the series. And we've been kind of, the show's high on the Pacers. We talked about it when the league survey came out, or the Cavs.
Yeah, so, you liked them. And Keith liked the Cavs. Brad Stevens liked the Cavs. You liked Indy way back when, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that was the toughest series that they played last year. And that the players are on record with that. Joe Mazzulla's on record saying that. Like, that was the toughest series that they played last year. And I don't think the Pacers get enough credit. And you know what's funny? Their season this year was pretty similar to one they had last year. Like, Halliburton got hurt in the middle of last year. They slipped a little bit, and then they had that improbable run to the conference finals. At least this year, they had a little bit more credibility, because obviously they're in the conference finals last year. But it was the same thing. Halliburton got banged up a little bit. It took them a little bit to get going, like longer than it should have. And so they were kind of a middling team, hanging around the 4 or 5 seed. And now, you know, they've been there before, and they're showing it. Like, the way they executed down the stretch, and what was it, game two, when they had that big comeback and like trailed by 7 with like 53 seconds left and ended up winning. Like, that's the kind of stuff that you learn from just having this postseason experience. And they were down 0-2 last year to New York, and they, you know, came back, dug out of that hole on the road. So that team's battle-tested, and that's a team, if I'm the Celtics, I wouldn't want to see. Like, they gave you a lot of trouble last year, and they're even better than they were last year this season. So that's a scary team.
What jumps out from the West? You have OKC and Denver tied 2-2, and then you have Minnesota up 2-1 with game four tonight.
Really, just in the case of the Denver and Oklahoma City, it's just the inefficiency of the stars. Like, they're doing a great job limiting Shea Gilgeous-Alexander. Mm-hmm. Denver's doing a great job, and that's what's kind of kept them in the series. And to think they're doing it with an interim coach is pretty impressive. But, you know, like, everything for the West other than that, like, Golden State obviously is hurting without Steph Curry. It's been kind of going to plan, but I don't think people expected Denver to push Oklahoma City as much as they had. And now they steal home court. Now it's a best of three in that series now. So, I mean, I don't know. There's a lot to be said about that championship poise. I think we saw it last year when the Celtics got Jrue Holiday, just how he executed down those stretches when it really mattered. And I think Denver's been there before, obviously. Jamal Murray, Nikola Jokic, MPJ, they have plenty of guys that have been there and done that, which could be invaluable. I mean, I wouldn't rule them out for certain. I haven't looked at the betting lines or anything for that series, but I would not rule out Denver beating Oklahoma City. They're a younger team. That was the biggest question mark surrounding them going into the postseason, is do they learn enough? Have they been there? Like, obviously, they had an early exit last year. You have to really learn to lose before you can learn to win, as weird as that sounds. And I don't know if Oklahoma City's done that.
All right, so Terp, we know you have full Celtics coverage, shoot around, games, et cetera, practices, day between games. What does Terp do when in New York? When you have some downtime, what is Terp doing in New York?
We actually played basketball yesterday at the Brooklyn Bridge Court. These courts were phenomenal. Like, it's like right on the water. You can see the Statue of Liberty from there. It's like literally right next to the Brooklyn Bridge. So that was pretty cool. And then we went out after. So yeah, we watched the Cavs Pacers. It's pretty much just a basketball retreat, to be honest. It was pretty fun.
Did you go down and play one-on-one against George the Messiah?
No, I didn't do that. I would love to, though. I mean, he's a little bit more physical. I'm more of a shooter. That's the thing.
Terps a finesse player?
Yeah.
Terps a shooter?
Yeah, he loves the Celtics.
Like, you would think I'm a center. Like, you'd think I'd play as like a power forward or a center. No, I play as a guard, which is pretty weird. Right. Yeah, no, I like to shoot.
All right,
okay,
fair enough.
I like that. What's the crew? What's your crew that you're running the streets with?
So we had yesterday, it was myself, Jack Simone, Bobby Manning from CLNS and Bobby Kravitzky, and we were taking on a couple of locals. We were running the court. We were running the court. We were holding it down. It was king of the court there, so it was fun.
Nice. Aztec Geno giving that a fist pump. Yeah. Terp, we appreciate it. Excellent coverage from Justin M. Turpin on Twitter, all over WEEI. You can check it out for Game 4 tonight. Terp, thanks so much. Talk to you Wednesday.
All right, guys. See you then.
All right. Thank you, Terp. Pure Hoops with Terp every week here on Jones and Keefe.
It's all
bonus appearance, though, yeah.
Watching hoops, playing hoops, covering hoops. You know, yeah. I mean, that's what he does. It's in his blood.
He's pure hoops. He tried to tell us that.
Yeah, no, he's not lying.
What'd you do when you were in New York? That was not the answer I expected.
Why? He's running the court.
I was playing pickup.
Brooklyn Bridge hoops? Like, what the hell?
Pure hoops.
I didn't know that was coming. Good for him.
No, for real, good for him.
Sick brag, bro.
Yeah, well, I wasn't an element of that. Yeah. Say it again.
Should have asked if it was chain nets.
Oh, that's the good real question.
Street ball.
Nets. I mean, sometimes you don't even get a net.
Yeah, that always threw me off.
No net?
A net and a double rim.
Because, like, my eyesight's not great.
Oh, really?
So, like, that it go isn't? In? Like, no, that didn't go in. Looks like it went
in. Are you sure?
Did I hit that?
Yeah, you could have some real debates about that. That's true.
You have to go off the backboard to really tell.
Yeah.
Tim Duncan dominates in the games like that. No nets.
I want footage George the Messiah scal style.
They
you're like
set want, up a little up like a little tripod and film Terp's games.
What are we watching on Twitch right now? Is this actual like Terp footage from where they were playing? Those are nice courts.
That'd be hilarious.
Is that what that is?
I have no idea.
I don't know either. Those look
Brian's
lovely.
Cooking something up back there. That could be where Terp's
could
playing.
Just be AI generated for all I don't even know what I'm looking at. But that if those are the courts, those look wonderful.
But I mean, they'll have to go back for game 6, right? Like that's already. The Celtics can't win in 5.
Well, no, the Celtics can't.
Well, you think the Knicks are going to win in 5?
I mean, I'm just saying, right now, there's no guarantee of a game 6 because of the Knicks.
Yeah, there could be just 2 games left in the series.
There could be. I'm not overly concerned about
that. I would not bet on that.
But no, there could be. You can jump in, 617-779-7937. I'm with Terp. Like, I mean, look, they weren't going to shoot 25% for the series. I do get that. So their shot was going to come back around. The ball movement's better in that last game, but he's right. Assists are flawed because you need to make baskets for your assists to go up. So I get all that. It starts with Tatum. If Tatum's locked in and Tatum's making all these shots, it's not like you don't defend Tatum when he's missing, but you have to people start scrambling because they go, holy crap, Tatum's locked in. We got to double him. I got to leave my guy. I can't leave him open. You start to panic on defense when the other team's best player is going. He hadn't been going. I don't think it's a coincidence that when he started this game on time, he started it by making threes. The rest of the shooting followed. It starts with him, as it does on most of these teams, with the best player. The top scorer needs to be that guy. And it's great that he throws in some rebounds and he plays some defense and he gets some assists. What he needs to do is score. That's what every best player, just about, on every team needs to do. That's where it's when SGA is struggling and he's not efficient.
Right.
That's part of the reason. I watched that series as closely as this. That's a big part of the reason why OKC is in a series 2-2. Because he's not going. I'd say the same thing about them that I'd say about Tatum.
Yeah, no, he has. So Tatum has more guys that can score
way
and
more
bail
help.
Him out,
yep.
Obviously.
Yep.
But the same is true for all those top guys. Like if Anthony Edwards or Donovan Mitchell or Jalen Brunson isn't scoring a lot, you're not going to hype up the other stuff. The other stuff is great, and it's what makes them great players, right? Like if he finishes the night, you know, 25 points, but he also has 10 boards, 7 assists for Tatum, like, great, that's great. But when you're, you know, low teens, you're like, well, you need more. You need a lot more than that, especially if you don't have a full strength Porzingis, especially if some of the other guys are shooting the way that they are. But yeah, no, I thought Tatum had a good game overall. My question is, with this team, we've seen 2 games where they couldn't throw it in the ocean, then 1 game where they couldn't miss. Does it continue like that where it's one or the other, or do they finally have a game that's sort of 34% as a team, and just sort of like what the average would be?
No, and look, they're going to, if they're shooting like that, they're
unbeatable.
Right. No one's going to beat them. The question is, do they need to win like that? Can they win close games? Can they execute? And do we have a series? Who's got more at stake in the game 4 tonight? I think that answer is pretty obvious, but you can jump in. 617-779-7937. We'll get to that with all your feedback right after Trending with Billy Lanning.
Do you know about the true crimes that inspired a Bruce Springsteen album? Or the murders AC/DC was blamed for? How about Taylor Swift's violent stalkers? Or the suspicious deaths of Brittany Murphy and River Phoenix? These stories and more are told in the Disgraceland podcast, hosted by me, Jake Brennan, every Tuesday, where I dive deep into subjects from the dark side of music history and entertainment. So follow and listen to Disgraceland on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.